Blog Talk Radio.
Love and happiness. Yeah. Something that can make you do wrong, make you do right. Yeah. Love. Love and happiness. Wait a minute, something going wrong. Someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, talking about how she can make it right. Yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah. Oh, baby, love and happiness.
Love and happiness.
Good evening, good evening. We're back again with you with another installment of Thoughts of a Brother on the day. On this good Sunday, we hope everybody enjoying yourself, went out to church, or however way you went about your worship and enjoyed yourself today. Or if you didn't go to church, just have God in your heart. That's about it, you know. On this good, productive Sunday, I'm sitting here with my co-host, me, myself, Derek Earl Randall, Dad, as I'm probably going to be called a lot on the show. You're here. To my left here. Go ahead, Coles.
Good evening, good evening. Corey T. Washington. Hope you enjoyed your Sunday, like Derek said. I'm passing on over to my left. What up, world? Boy Bong.
Happy Sunday to everybody. Like everybody else already said, happy Sunday. And we're ready to get in.
So we're going to move right on then, fellas. I got the in the know. You know, our signature thing, in the know, keep us up on the topics going around. We'll have a little round table on that. The first topic today I got for y'all. Y'all know the Eagles released DeSean Jackson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of it, from the backlash of it, was they saying because he's gang affiliated. Did you guys hear about that?
No, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, see, now, originally, he was supposed to be in kind of a trouble player, you know, started a lot of trouble, and him and I don't think Chip Kelly kind of hit it off too good. So, originally, he was already on the trading block. Mm-hmm. But a lot of sources saying now they went and found this gang affiliation thing and used it as an excuse to cut it. Now, to their credit, in 2010, a 14-year-old was gunned down in South Los Angeles after flashing gang sign. The guy who was charged later is an artist that's signed to DeSean Jackson's Jackpot. Yeah, let me make sure I'm saying this right. Jackpot Records. So that's a part of the affiliation they was trying to draw into it. Now, this was back in 2010. I think in 2011, when they questioned DeSean or whatever, they said he was not affiliated. Now, in 2012, they said a gang-related murder was in a building that may have been leased or owned by one of his family members. And when they investigated the crime scene, they found a car title, a gun permit, and several credit card receipts that were DeSean Jackson. Now, I guess my question would be, is this relevant, or did you just want to get rid of the man, or does this really, if you were the owner of the Eagles, and you've seen a player now with the way things are, i.e. Aaron Hernandez for the New England, for the Patriots, would you be reluctant to keep him on your squad, no matter how good he is?
I feel like you signed him to play football.
Yeah.
If his actions, his personal actions, have not been detrimental to your team to this point, anything else is, like you say, you're looking for the excuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're looking for something.
And then, and like you're saying, like, it don't help. You got the backstory of him and Chip Kelly by the head.
I mean, we're talking about young,
explosive,
rich, black males, not just DeSean Jackson, but I mean young, rich, black males in the NFL. I'm going to step out on a limb and say 90% of those players know somebody that might know somebody that knows somebody who, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Sound like they fishing to me.
Excuse me.
Sound like they were looking for a reason or an excuse to release them. And, cause, come on.
Yeah, and then
credit
they
car receipts and guns. Like, come on.
Sound like
and,
a criminal investigation.
Right,
like,
to me.
Exactly. And then it comes down to it, like, that's if someone went on at your house, a courthouse, like a bone house, and you investigate the crime scene and you happen to find paperwork with my name on it. We do a talk show together. We do business together. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That don't mean I'm affiliated with it. It just means me and you personally. I mean, that's a family member.
That's the thing that they're saying, though. By you having that personal relationship with that person or that type of activity.
Right, right.
then in that case, they should be releasing half the players in NFL,
right,
like,
right,
you said. Like you said.
I mean, you can't. Pretty much it's the birds of a feather thing.
Yeah. And then Aaron Hernandez don't help because they can point finger at that and say, well, we don't want to go there.
Well, then, but if that's the route you're going to take, you got to investigate everybody.
Right. That's true, too. But it's only going to come up relevant to when you want to get rid of somebody.
Exactly.
And that's what I guess
so
we're coming back
just
to.
Say, okay, we want to go in a different direction.
And they could have
easily
said, yeah, but, you know, it was unliked or unfavorable decision because most of the people in Philadelphia are trying to figure out why you got rid of Deshaun Jackson.
You got rid of Andy Reid.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's true, too. But I guess they felt, well, I guess it's the same thing. You can say the course had ran with him, too. So.
Yeah, so they just come out and say, as an organization, we choose to go a different route. Deshaun Jackson don't fit. Take the backlash and move on. But don't try to make it.
They're putting a disadvantage on him for trying to get another job.
Yeah,
they've opened the door for other teams to label him as well. They released him because he's game filler or a troublemaker. Why would we sign?
And they even went as far as to say, we released him instead of trading him in case another team got him and didn't know about these things. So it's almost, you can look at it as if like it was
trying to kill
him. Yeah. So that's more of a personal thing.
Yeah, it's personal.
It's coming back to personal.
It's personal to me.
And it sounds like because I think he signed a 5-year extension last year, and then the end of last year after the season, they had a bad season, he asked for more money or something like that. So I think they took that personal. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I'm pretty sure there's some stuff that we don't know
about. Right. And you can tell, reading in between the lines, it kind of looks that way. You know? I thought that was pretty interesting. Anyway, because, you know, nowadays, and it brings back to, we have to be careful with how we affiliate ourselves, even if, say, for instance, he doesn't have any wrong. When you get in a certain position, much as you may not like it or not, you might have to change your environment and those things around. You don't agree?
I don't know.
You said change your environment. You ain't say change who you are.
Yeah.
Change your environment.
But how do we know that this is his environment?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But we don't know that. He ain't got in no trouble. I don't remember him getting arrested for gang activity.
Right.
So then you can't talk about my environment. You reaching for people that I might know.
Yeah.
How am I wrong for who I know?
It's so open that it shouldn't even be even approached.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? We shouldn't even be talking
that,
about. Yeah.
The whole story ain't that over.
Yeah.
There's something else going on.
Next topic. 8-year-old girl pulled out of private school in Virginia. She got a short haircut and, quote, she dressed with sporty clothes. The school sent a letter home with her. And the letter stated, she was confusing other students about their gender identity and went on to imply that the child was sexually immoral. What is that?
Sexually
immoral.
Yeah. Because she got a short haircut.
8-year-old? 8-year-old.
Yeah.
8 now. I ain't saying 14, 15. I probably should have put in here that it's a Christian school.
Okay.
Yeah, that's...
That makes
it
different.
Yeah, it's a Christian school. And the letter even went as far as to say it was against the laws of the Bible and stuff like that. But I thought being an 8-year-old, I thought it was a little extreme, but then it goes back to that conversation we had at the end of the last show. You know, if it's what you believe is right, you have to stand up on and say something.
Well, it's a private school.
Yeah.
So by them being a private school,
they said they don't like what they choose.
We don't like little girls with short hair wearing quote-unquote sporty clothes, then we can say that. Had it been a public school, it would have been a whole other type of situation.
Yeah.
But by them being private, I mean, what can you say?
Public school, they probably wouldn't say
no.
They were smart.
Because, look, we just talked about last week,
and
he didn't know a teacher.
Exactly.
Changing his gender, you know, after 24 years.
He actually changed. This is an 8-year-old
girl.
She's not changed.
She just, I mean, I think... From the picture I seen on MSN, she's like a little tomboy.
Yeah.
You know, we call her tomboy back in the day. You know, athletic looking girl. That's pretty much it. And she got a short haircut.
And I'm saying, at 8 years old, let's be honest. At 8 years old, you're not making your own decision. Not like that. you're not making your decision about things that's going to impact your life like this. I feel like it might have been something else at home going on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, do we know if she had other brothers or sisters?
Well,
we know any of that?
I mean, but, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
It's almost style now for women to have short fades and short haircuts like that. Now,
that's a way of expression. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's a way of expression. It's a style now.
Yeah.
It's a fad.
It's a fad. So, I mean, is it the haircut that you have an issue with or the sporty clothes?
Right.
See, once again, I feel like it's more to the story than it's being told. Like, there's some stuff that we don't know.
Right.
That don't make sense to me.
And then it was saying, I think she lived with, it said foster or adopted. So we don't know what the backlash was before she got in the home she's in now, you know, and how that all comes about for her to be in that predicament. But I thought it was just interesting because she was 8 years old. That's the only thing. It was like 8 years old. It was kind of far.
Probably she ain't fit in the school anyway. Now, yeah. That's probably the best thing to happen to her to get out of it.
Right. And then the only reason, when I read into the article, the grandparents, they were saying grandparents, not parents, they were saying grandparents, but then I think she was adopted, so I don't know if they were an older couple or what, but it was saying that the little girl cries now because she misses her friends.
Yeah, you could expect that.
Right. Especially at 8, yeah, definitely. Check this out, now this is going to shake up something here. A rich couple who owned a $1.2 million 83-foot yacht docked in South Florida lived in waterfront homes in Minnesota and Lighthouse Point, Florida, and had a $3 million tucked away in various bank accounts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fraud is on the run right now for fraud because they were collecting food stamps, Medicaid, and welfare, first in Minnesota, then in Florida, then for a year in both states. What y'all think about?
I think the government got exactly doing your job.
Right?
Diligence.
What you think about that?
Anybody who fill out an application, you automatically accept, well, then you got what you wanted. You know what I'm saying? Like, you, now, I'm not going to say that because I know people who really do deserve it.
Right,
people
right,
who really
right.
do need it, and they get turned down. But they got what they needed. I get it.
I believe it go on more than we think.
I honestly believe that.
And I think this is just one of the isolated cases where they're making it known, but I think going more than we think. And it might not be to the extreme of people having $3 million tucked away. It might be just comfortable. You know what I mean? Comfortable as in, you know, I work as a husband. I'm bringing in a good paycheck. My wife bringing in a good paycheck. We can send our children to private school, but we get Medicaid, food stamps, you know, other stuff like that. They even said in the article that one of their kids, I think the state paid for it because you know how that falls under the Medicaid thing. It's like they paid like $12,000 for that. They had them pulled all this up. But I'm trying to figure out how you didn't catch this.
They don't check. They don't do
yeah.
that. They don't care about all that.
Now the people on the run, I think they've been on the run for like 6 weeks or something like that. They're looking for them. But
saying, what's crazy. The penalty, though? What am I running from?
It's fraud.
I understand that.
Yeah.
What's the penalty?
Oh, I don't know. I
just have to pay the money back? Or am I facing...
It could be.
They might be... Depends on the extreme. Now, this girl, they got, if they're millionaires, they might be out to make an example out of them.
Yeah, that's what I think it's all about. Because they even said in the article that the man go by Lord and the lady go, and the wife go by Lady or something. So they like, yeah, you know what I mean? They living it up.
Okay.
They living it up. I think it was from somewhere, Swedish or something like that. Sweden or something.
Oh, well, they ain't going to catch them.
No, they gone. They just done caught on to what they were doing, but they gone.
I mean, what at the end of the day, what benefit is it to put this story out? What were you trying to accomplish? Are you doing major yourself with now?
Right. That's exactly what I was going to say. You kind of expose yourself.
Yeah,
and like we said, it's probably out there more than that anyway. You just want to bring this example out and make an example of these people.
I mean, the line is so thin to how they treat people with this public assistance stuff. Like a single parent, I know plenty of them who work and make decent, I guess we would say living, but could use the assistance and can't get it for the simple fact that so many people, quote unquote, take advantage of the system. But you have these people who I'm assuming didn't become millionaires overnight, who I don't know how long they've been getting assistance, but at the end of the day, like,
it did
tell you how long they've been in it?
I'm totally speculating, but if I remember correctly, it was between 5 and 10 years they've been doing it.
They've been getting assistance that long?
Yeah.
Man, you haven't realized in all
this
time.
That
these people have assets.
And went from two, because right now, the people, they've been hunted, and, well, I should say hunted, but they're being pursued from Minnesota. Florida hasn't even filed anything yet.
Yeah, well, again.
Which Florida might not have even known if Minnesota wouldn't have caught on.
I'm going to say again, I feel like if you can get it, whatever.
Yeah. Let's talk about Kobe Bryant. I know y'all done heard about this, right?
I don't pay attention to Kobe.
Okay. Me even much. But this one caught my eye. You heard about it?
These boys are saying Kobe is irrelevant.
Well, I have a dislike for Kobe. And it's not a personal thing. Well, maybe it is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is. I don't like how he come off sometimes. I respect his game. He's one of the greatest players I've seen play. I think he's on the top of his game. He's one of the best. I put him in my top five any day of the week. But I just don't like how he come off.
Okay, let's go with this.
Okay,
right.
Nothing.
We'll go there.
The New Yorker, the magazine, the New Yorker magazine,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's coming out tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked Kobe his take on the Heat supporting Trayvon Martin.
Supporting?
Yeah. You remember when they wore the hoodie?
The hoodie
picture
that, right.
Okay. And I'm quoting. This is Kobe's. This is what Kobe said. He said, "I won't react to something just because I'm supposed to. Because I'm an African American. That argument doesn't make sense to me. So we want to advance as a society and a culture, but say if something happens to an African American, we immediately come to his defense.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, you want to talk about how far we progress as a society. Well, we've progressed as a society, then. Don't start to jump to someone's defense just because they're African American. You sit and you listen to the facts because they're African American. I'm sorry. You sit and you listen to the facts like you would in any other situation, right? So I won't assert myself." What do you think about it?
So he's saying that he won't react or respond to a situation based solely on the fact that the victim was African American.
Right. Now, remember, it's from the take of the Trayvon Martin case. So they was asking him about the pictures that the Heat posted of them in hoodies in support of Trayvon Martin at the time of the trial was going to begin. He's saying he won't assert himself because you should sit and wait for – this is me assuming. I think he's saying let the trial play itself out. You get the facts, and then you come to someone's defense. You don't just come to the defense because you share ethnicity.
What it sounds like to me, it sounds like that has been his stance since day one.
Yeah.
He has not involved himself within the fact of, now I'm not going to say the fact, but the case itself or getting involved in any kind of support of Trayvon Martin because he didn't want to do it because I'm not going to just jump to it because he's
right.
Black.
Right.
That's what it sounds like to me. And he's sticking with his stance. Now, that's why I don't like Kobe Bryant. That's why I don't like Kobe Bryant. For that right there. And I'm just like you, Dad. One of the greatest players ever. I'm with all of that. Top five, all of that.
But that's why I don't like him.
Wait, though, man.
Here we go.
We sit here every week and talk about being free to have your own opinion and your own thought process.
That's my opinion. I don't like him.
You don't like him because of his thought process?
I don't like
him.
He's
just saying, to me, from what I hear, what he's saying is, I'm not just going to jump in the fire simply because I know a black man in the fire. Let's find out what really happened.
You know, my only problem with that is, it was nobody on the face of earth didn't know the facts of that case before they went to trial.
That's what I'm saying.
So you can't sit here and tell me you didn't feel, when you found out what happened to Trayvon, other boy up in Jacksonville got shot up in the car, that you already knew. And you side yourself, ain't no way logically it makes sense for that boy to be dead off of the story that I'm hearing right now. You don't need no trial for that.
Kobe Bryant,
you don't.
He didn't grow up black. You know,
I'm sorry.
Okay, he grew up black in the
physical sense.
But he doesn't know the plight of a black man growing up. In any kind of,
a struggle.
The man, did he grow up in Spain or something?
Greece. I know he talks a couple of languages because his daddy was a basketball player and he followed
him. I don't know Kobe Bryant personally. I don't know him personally.
Dog looking like him, like he's talking about.
That's fine. That's fine. I want him to get to his point, but I'm just.
I don't know that I don't like the fact that he talks about Kobe. I can care less about Kobe. Well. My thing is this. Why do we attack Kobe? Because we feel like his opinion or his viewpoint is misguided.
Well,
Still another black man who spoke out on a situation, even as misguided or as unagreeable as his comments may have been to us, do we turn around and attack Kobe?
I appreciate Kobe for standing on what he believed and saying in the manner he did, because he has a lot of legitimacy to what he's saying.
Right.
I understand that. But the only thing is, that trial was so publicized and so already known, for him to say that in that moment was almost like he was slapping our community in the face.
Okay. We went here a couple of weeks ago. Let's turn it around where the victim is not black, but the suspect is black.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to OJ.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether OJ did it or not, I think all three of us in this room can honestly say we either A, believe he did it, B, know who did it, or C, was involved. I think we can say that with all certainty and honesty if we would. But yet, we watched that trial and was hoping that he get off.
You're right.
That's true.
Just because
he was black.
He's black.
And that's where COVID point becomes legitimate. And that's what I'm saying. And in that moment, which I think I was in high school or middle school when that happened.
High school.
When that happened, I wasn't to the understanding I am now either. Because I was dead wrong. I say that now, live on air. I was dead wrong for rooting for him.
Exactly. So now, I'm saying the same thing about Kobe. Regardless of how you feel, I can't say whether you're right or wrong about what you're saying.
Right.
The fact that you're standing up for what you believe, I'm okay with. If this is what you believe and you feel like I'm not going to get involved in this because I don't know the facts and I'm not going to do it just because you're black or blah, 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 that's what you genuinely believe in yourself and you're willing to take whatever come from that, I respect that.
And to your point, he deserves a lot of respect for being able to be candid enough to come out and say his true beliefs because he knew he was going to take backlash, because later he tweeted, since this hit the internet and everybody knows it's coming out tomorrow, he tweeted, Trayvon Martin was wrong. That's my opinion.
Who was wronged?
Wronged. He's saying Trayvon Martin was wrong. That's my opinion. And that's what I believe the facts showed. The system did not work. Hashtag my opinion. Hashtag tweet your thoughts. So after getting the facts, I guess he's saying now he realized what we're saying he should have realized then. But in the same point you're making, he's saying the facts wasn't really laid out.
Why should I ever realize that? I don't know what happened.
So to his defense, that's why I got his tweet. So it wouldn't seem like I was totally bashing because I had to be, you know, I had to get his tweet.
But right. I understand what it is. You just don't like COVID anything.
Yeah.
And you just don't like COVID simple. And that tells how great he is.
Yeah. That's
you true. Got people who don't like you and don't know you.
Oh, no.
The fact that people don't like you, but still respect you.
Respect you.
I want
you
to throw that in.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's his greatness. That's what that brings. That's what it breeds. People just ain't going to like you for the simple fact that you Kobe. I don't like it. People don't like LeBron for the simple fact.
Hey, LeBron. LeBron. Yeah, that's true. People didn't like Jordan either for that.
So I'm one of them. I stay.
Yeah. I get it.
Did it.
I totally get it. So I'm gonna get, so I'm finna get off Kobe because he got too much of my air time there. Nah, I'm just playing. But check this out, man. A Brooklyn man with diabetes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Says a local movie theater called the police on. But check out why they called the police on. Because he refused to throw away strawberries he took into the movie theater, which would, for him would have been the sugar he needed while the movie was going. So they called the police. Now, he said when he was approached by the manager, you know, she said, like, you're going to have to throw that away. So he said he felt in a way like they were just saying it. And he was like, well, you need to give me my money back. And she refused to give him the money back, so he kept right on walking into the movie.
Hey, oh, you done?
Yeah, that's it. He went right on into the movie, and he looked up and the police was there. He said she called his bluff.
That's the story in a nutshell. You got rules. Okay, I bought a ticket to come see a movie. What I brought with me goes against your rules. Cool. I haven't seen the movie. Can I get refunded my money
right.
for the movie?
Right. They didn't refund him.
You say no. Cool. I'm going to see the movie.
Yeah, I paid for
it. And I'm taking what I brought with me to see the movie.
I paid for this.
Now, you need to call the police. Cool. Okay, I tell you what. You don't want me to have strawberries. Give me something out of your counter, out of your concession
right.
area. It's going to help me in case... I go into one of my fits or whatever the case may be. Are you willing to do that? Oh, you ain't going to give me? Okay. Now what we going to do?
I'm finna watch the movie.
Because I'm not going to just let you keep my money and throw away what I might need. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, that was, but I thought, like, when I was reading it, I was like, how can you, like, because the manager could probably couldn't let that go.
Of course they could.
You know what I'm saying? But to be that.
If he explained himself, did he explain? Medical condition, I mean,
I don't know.
See,
I didn't say they didn't go into that kind of
yeah,
detail.
You know what I'm saying?
But the fact that the man said, listen, I'm willing to not go into your theater with these strawberries
it's
and give me my money.
Should have gave his money back.
Give him his money back. If you don't want him breaking your rule that much, refund the man money, and then y'all call it, y'all separate part ways, go on about your business. You're going to keep my money, but yet tell me what I can't do. So now I can't get my money back, and I can't have another.
And it don't really make a lot of sense because if you think about it, why are you gonna keep the money if he's trying to go in here and you really don't want him to go in there with you, just give the man the money and be done with it.
That ain't what we wanna do. We wanna make it exact. We wanna show you our authority. You gonna come
that's
in.
What it sound like.
That's exactly what it sounds
like. We have
authority. And the manager was a female.
That's even worse.
Yeah. Sorry.
Whatever, I said it. Okay, but at the end of the day, like, it was very simple to kill this, but you chose not to. You wanted it to go the way you wanted it to. You wanted to get the police involved, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's, and he said she called my bluff, because I think she must be mentioned to him, I'll call the police on you or something, and he probably just, you know, heard it and was like, yeah, whatever, you threatened me, I know you don't go that far with some strawberry.
No.
He said when he went in the movie. He looked at the police was standing next to him. You know, I mean, after he got got situated, the police was over.
So he lost his money and his strawberries and got locked up.
No. Did he go to jail?
No, he didn't go to jail. I think they escorted him out, but I guess embarrassment.
No, Mr. Policeman, since she called you, this is what we need you to do.
You need to
give me my money. I asked her to give me my money back, and we wouldn't have had to call you. She didn't want to give me my money back. I wasn't going to throw my strawberries away. So, now you here, and you make the call. What are we about to do?
You finna leave these premises, because I have nothing to do with their money. I have no control over it. What they do, what they decide with their money.
Well, you ain't got nothing to do with my strawberries.
I ain't coming for strawberries. I came here for you.
Okay. Well, I hope there's a seat next to me so we can both watch this movie.
Hey.
Because, no, it don't work that way.
You have to
keep my money.
That is the way it works.
I'd like to hear
Morally, I totally
understand. I agree with you morally.
But authoritative.
Authoritative, we got
you. Yeah. I'm just messing up words, man.
That's right. That's what we do.
I think the police probably went the same way, too. Now, granted, you might have got a police who's seen the ins and outs of that and really made them
get his money. Where was this at? Where was the movie theater at? In Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
No. I take my chances in Brooklyn. I take my chances. We was in New England somewhere. We was somewhere in one of them kind of cities. And I probably would have been like, okay. Yeah,
I'm going to ask you this. Our mindset, being that we from Florida and not recently we dealt with this gentleman, these two who just happened to be Caucasian,
mm-hmm.
You know, that their altercation in a movie theater led to someone losing their life.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that had anything to do with it? You know, that on a normal case, that manager would have decided to deal with that situation either on her own or let it go or something like that, but just coming off of that, do you think that there might be company policy. Now, you have an issue with a customer, you don't deal with it personally, you call the authorities.
No, I don't, and I don't, because if there was anybody involved in that situation before the police got called that could have extinguished it, it was the manager. You had the authority to refund this man his money and just send him on about his way. Kill the whole problem.
Yeah.
That $10, $15, however that movie costs, is not worth the problem. Get a man his money, let somebody else buy this ticket, and we go on about our day.
I do believe, though, that incident, and probably even the incident in Colorado where the guy went in and shot the movie theater, has made the awareness high.
Yeah.
But in this example, well, I'm saying because you're talking about movie theaters in general.
Uh-huh.
But in this example, like you say, if he asked for his money back, that could have been handled really easy.
Real easy.
Yeah, that could have been handled really easy.
The movie ain't started. I ain't got nothing. All I did was exchange money for a ticket. Let's make this same exchange, and I go about my business. What's the problem?
I don't know, man. It just seemed like a mess to me. But it made the news, and it made the end of the note. So
yeah.
That's the end of the note for this week, man. That's for this Sunday anyway. We'll be back with it on Wednesday. But the topic of today's show is coming from where I'm from. So we're gonna move on into that.
Yeah, we struggled with this one for a couple of days. Exactly which direction we wanted to go with it, because you can take this a couple of different ways, and I think we had one idea when we came up with the title for the show. But in sitting down and thinking about it, we collectively came to an agreement that what we would do is kind of reintroduce ourselves to you. Because there are a lot of people who may know each one of us individually, or you may know all three of us, but you know us from a specific period in time in life. That may raise the question, well, where are your opinions and where are your comments coming from? If I've known you for 3 years or if I've known you for 15, there are still some years that I don't know about and things that I don't know about you. So long story short, we just decided to open up and, again, reintroduce ourselves as co-hosts to this show to you. We're just going to see how this thing goes. Putting ourselves in a vulnerable state, but at the end of the day, because of what we believe in, we're willing to do it.
Yeah, and more of anything else, we believe, because like Cora said, collectively we sat down and talked about it, we believe for you to understand the passion and our drive, you need to understand where we've been, what we've been through, and where we're going.
Yeah.
You know, and not to cut you short or not to shortchange you, we're going to give it to you. We're going to give it to you. And it's very, it's going to be, we're going inside ourselves. That's how I'm going to say it. We're going inside ourselves. There's some things we probably going to put out here. We already talked about it. It's people real close to us don't even know. You know, so I'm ready to go in because I think my story needs to be told.
go for it.
So we start our childhood.
And the reason is because, again, in talking about it, a lot of our ideals and a lot of our opinions are shaped through experiences in childhood.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily understand it or realize it until we go back and reflect. But if you think about events or whether they be good or bad, things that have happened to you in your childhood, they probably have a lot of impact on who you are today. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to...
No, you're good. You're good. I'm trying to wait on boning you.
Listen, man, since we talked about this, I've been apprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it.
Okay. Y'all know me.
Yeah.
But I guess some things, some people, it goes along the line of what we're doing here, don't know.
And that's the point. Yeah.
I don't really talk about me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really talk about me. You know, and so to put ourselves in a situation to be open and honest with ourselves and in return share it with people that are listening.
It takes a lot.
Yeah, it takes a lot.
And I'm still struggling. I'm over here listening to y'all talk, and I'm struggling with it to this moment.
I think we just do. That's why we went and do it. I think we just do, man. But, you know, I'm going to make it plain. As a child, I didn't really want for anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. I hear people a lot of times saying, you know, I came from nothing and now I have it. I won't tell that lie. I came from everything. I came from everything. Where monetary things lacked, I had love. You know what I'm saying? As a child, I was sheltered. I felt safe at all times. Everybody around me seemed to get along. Family-wise, it was jovial, however way you want to put it. But it made me the person I am today, and I didn't realize that because you forget that when you get older. That's a part of your life was then, and this is now. But that little boy, Derek, is that grown man, Derek, today. You have to find that to be able to be a man. Because if you don't know where you come from, you ain't here. Yeah, you ain't here. And that's it, man. I mean, we went to church. I had to go to church every Sunday. That was a part of my life. I went to Sunday school 9:45. 9:45 was in Sunday school. 11 o'clock, I was ushering on the first and third. And on the second and fourth, I was sitting next to my grandma in the deaconess corner. You know what I'm saying? And on Monday through Friday, I went to school. We got out of school, went home, changed our clothes, did our homework if we had any. And we played basketball, football, throwing a bus up, whatever. We played together at Houston. That was our childhood. And inside of that, we didn't see all that other stuff. That's all we seen and that's all we knew. And for us, that was good. There's a lot of days now as a grown man, I wish I could just go to school, come home, change clothes, and go outside and play. And know I'm going to church on Sunday. I mean, that pattern set the stage for me to get to a point where I might have drifted and realized that was good. What you're doing now is bad. You know what I'm saying? That childhood. And we forget about that. And that's why I say, for us to express ourselves and let people know, we have to let them know our childhood. To understand how we got here and where we came from and what we doing and why we doing. Our love for the community come from the fact our community raised us.
Yeah.
Our community raised us. Ain't no doubt about that. All three of us know that. Our bond today is strong because we came up in that community together. Our bond is strong with everybody we grew up with, no matter what path of life we took. The same kids we played basketball with at 6 and 7 years old, we can see right now today, and we're going to dap them up just like we seen them yesterday.
Yeah.
And go on the conversation.
And go on the conversation. Like, and you might even see them in 15 years. But it's just a bond. You know what I mean? And that's the thing about the childhood part. You know, I know I'm going into mine. I'm finna pass it off the court because Bo's still over there. He rubbing his beard.
You know, I'm good. I'm going to go ahead and go.
Okay,
you know,
good.
In a
good.
Sense, you're talking about childhood. Yeah, I can't really say I wanted for much any either as a child, you know. And I could almost say I was spoiled.
Yeah.
You know, in a sense, I'm the youngest of three, you know, the only boy, no junior. I reap from all of that.
Yeah.
I reap from all of that, not just my family, but, you know, my extensions of family as well. You know, and talking about church, I was at church every Sunday. I wasn't there Wednesday in the mother night.
Yeah.
But I was there Sunday school and church, you know, and in a way, I can see how that shaped me as a man today. Like you said, you know, being there, straying from that. I didn't necessarily stray. I rebelled from that, to be honest with you. Y'all know me. Y'all grew up. Now, to this day, when we sit and we talk about God and, you know, going to church and all that, the simple fact that I'm even involved in the conversation, I understand, can kind of take y'all back to our younger years when that wasn't me.
No.
So I feel you on that.
Yeah.
Well, I think we all, in a sense, were spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
I was the youngest. All my siblings were pretty much grown by the time I came along. So a lot of the stuff that they probably would have got murdered for, I got away with. You know what I mean? Like, and it caught. See, I'm gonna go a different route.
Go ahead.
You know, this is what I do. I'm talking about how things shaped personality.
Mm-hmm.
I had a car. What, 13, 14?
14, yeah.
I also had a job, but I had a car. I was able to go and do pretty much as I please because I bucked the system a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, once you give me the means to get around, I'm gone.
That was it.
That was it.
Yeah, I'm out of here. The only way you're going to keep me back in here is you take these
keys.
And if you take these keys, somebody else might have one, so I still might be gone. But at the end of the day, I'm going back to, I was raised in a house with a mama and a daddy, mother, father for some people. But it was mostly me and mama.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And by me knowing I had brothers and sisters, but them being so much older than me, I ain't had nobody to talk to. When it's time to talk, I talk to my mama as my friend.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave me an older, I would say, attitude. It would gave me an older outlook. A lot of the things that maybe you two were privileged to discuss, or because I know you had your cousins, they right around your age, and then you had your friends or whatever. I'm pretty sure you had cousins and all that, which I had family members that were close in age, but we weren't close like that. So I said all that to say, even though I had things, there were other things that I didn't have that would have probably meant more than those material things.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. My daddy was there. I saw him in the house. I saw him on a daily. But we didn't talk. You know what I mean? It wasn't no conversation. This is what life gonna throw at you. This is what you probably should try to do with yourself. This is what I went through. This is what I know about life. None of that was that. When there was conversation, it was more so you talking at me than talking to me. And it kind of put me in a place to where I'm not comfortable talking to people outside of those that I feel I'm close to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I can't just walk up and start a conversation. That's just not me. So when I say, on days when you hear me say, man, this is not me, this thing we doing right here is not me. I don't know how I'm here. I don't know what's giving me the motivation to do this. That's where that comes from.
Right.
Because I'll sit amongst the group for hours and not open my mouth. I listen. But, you know.
It's funny that you say that, though, because we talked about this off mic. Me, you, and Bone, we talked about this. And we talked about how we feel, even for us, it was a shock to see you so candid and so open on the mic. Because we know, besides that, besides, before this mic became a part of our environment or what we're doing, you would talk to me, Bone, and we got another friend out there that you would talk to But we never really see you interact with anybody else in that manner. And now, given that backstory you just gave me, it makes total sense.
Right.
It makes total sense.
It's not
that
I have anything personal against anybody. It's not anything other than familiarity. I don't know if I said that right, but
we'll make them up. We'll make up words
as we go.
Yeah.
I have to. It takes a while for me to allow a person to get close to me. But once you do, I can't. It's hard for me to break
off. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, I ain't turning it off. Once I turn it on,
That's why it takes a long time for me to turn it on. But when it's on, then it's on until it'll take something real drastic for me to say, you know what, I ain't got nothing else to say to you. Period.
So what you're saying is that your relationship, it wasn't a lack of a relationship. It was your relationship with your father has kind of shaped how you accept or communicate with people that you meet?
Somewhat. Yeah, I would say that. And it's crazy because I don't know how he was in his personal life.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because y'all didn't talk.
Well, on the other side, I only saw him talk to a couple of people where he would have conversation. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know who he talked to when I went around. But
right.
People that he would invite to the house or go to their house. It was a select few. It might have been four or five people, if that. So to see that kind of play out the same way with me is kind of crazy. Like, okay, did I just think this is the way it was supposed to be, or is it something more there that gave me that?
Right.
I could totally relate to that, too.
Definitely.
I can totally relate to that.
I'm sitting and thinking in my head,
dynamic with my father shaped me totally, and I didn't even realize until after I lost it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I understand totally what you're saying, because the things we pick up, it might not even be in a conversation with him. It's just after seeing the way he done things, the way he went about doing things, you see yourself doing the same thing and don't even realize.
Right.
And you did some of them, you might have not liked it.
Yeah, good.
When he was doing them,
good.
And then when you find yourself doing them later, you're like, man.
As much as I couldn't stand the fact that you did that.
Yeah.
Find yourself.
I found myself doing it.
That's that impact. And that goes back to the childhood. The impact that was put in your life as a child follows you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does. It follows you. I mean, we can even go to the instance where we had run-ins with somebody that was our friend.
Mm-hmm.
At the schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened in that run-in, we still to this day I'll refer back to that to them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, y'all, don't mess with what Tucker said. Yeah, that joke was crazy way back when.
Or we know how far to take it. We know what to do and what not to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we learned that in childhood. I didn't want to, and I'm not going to focus just on that aspect of childhood because, again, I was talking about the conversations and the things. Like, I'm going to be honest. My time after, like, okay, we had that time when we get out of school, you go home, you change your clothes, you go to the schoolhouse, you play until
street lights come
2 minutes before the street lights come on.
Because if the street lights come on, you ain't in the house yet.
You are already late.
Yeah.
You're in trouble. So you need to know what time the street lights come on and be in the house 2 minutes before that, or be on your way 2 minutes.
It's great, and we knew that.
Then we knew that. Everybody, it was like roaches. We dispersed.
It was like this. If the street light come on and I ain't in the house, I probably ain't going in the house till late.
I'm finna take it.
I'm already
on
my way.
I'm finna take this. And I'm finna try to convince you to stay with me.
No.
We did.
Well, but we all knew if we talking past street lights, we all
know.
Oh, but that time when I'm in the house and it's a weeknight and it's 6:00, 6:30. It ain't no talking on the phone to no peers.
Right.
It ain't no brother or sister in the house to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
So my options were I had to talk to mama, or I just got to sit and let the TV entertain me.
Yeah.
Those are my two options. There's only so much you're going to watch on TV that you understand at that age.
Right.
And you watching what they watch.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because back then, we didn't have no choice of changing the TV. What the house watch, everybody.
That's
watch.
What. That's what.
You know
what I
mean? That's how
it
was.
Going like that, you go to bed.
Yeah. Good night.
So I said all that to say, like, again, I understand. I've been talking to people like you. You just seem like an old man.
Mm-hmm.
You have this old man personality, and I couldn't understand it because I thought everybody thought this way.
Right.
Everybody think like this. But then looking back, I understand why I got an old man. But I was talking to old people.
Yeah.
No harm intended. But my mama is pretty much old enough to be my grandma.
Mm-hmm.
So back during that time, she hadn't raised sons and daughters, and she hadn't done all that.
Right.
And here I come along. I'm tired now. You know what I'm saying?
And you moving too fast. It wasn't like this with
Dougie. Yeah, like, I'm tired. So now you got to find a way to entertain this 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Being 40. How you do that? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You have to think, I try to think about it from another. Think about it from outside my own mind. Think about it from her perspective. How do I keep this young man? How do I said last week that I didn't have the motivation and the push to go past high school. It was just, you know, finish school, get your good education where you can get your good job, take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, I felt I was cheated in that. So I had to step outside myself to understand she gave you the best of what she knew, what she could offer you at that point. I've raised with my, this is all I know. I've been working since I was 20.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I know.
I feel you in that. You know, I was born late in my parents' life as well, you know. And how I looked at it, looking at it today, is that by the time I came along, parenting was easy. They figured out a way to do it easier. Then, you know, we all being parents in this room here, you know, when you had that, your first child, and how, you know, hand and foot you down every step of the way, you know, to the point where, okay, it's become stressful now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that second one come along, okay.
You know,
it's a little easier now. I learned that I ain't necessarily got to do that. I ain't necessarily got to buy the top brand Pampers and the number one selling formula. And I, you know, that this is just as good, a little less expensive. You know, so you learn. So by the time, you know, my mother was almost 42, 40-something also when I came along. So by that time, they already figured it out.
Yeah.
It was figured out right now. I ain't got to do all of that. You just do what I say, and we'll be okay.
That's it.
That is it. Just do what I tell you to do. Don't do what I tell you not to do, and you will be fine. I won't have to put my hands on you.
Yeah.
You ain't got to cry. You can be peaceful and do what it is that makes you happy as a child.
But see, what that set us up for is, or what, no, not what it set us up for, what it set them up. Is that same child going out and learning from their peers.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Things that they didn't learn at home, which kind of takes us into the years after early childhood, kind of starting to develop an independence about yourself. You're going to work now. I'm on my own when I get up and go to school now. I iron my own clothes.
Fix my own
breakfast if I eat
that
breakfast.
That independence starts.
Yeah.
Especially as men, I mean, as young men, young teenage men, or boys at that time. See, like, in that point, like, I had a little advantage on you boys. If you want to call it an advantage, it could be a disadvantage. But my mom, I think my mom was 25 or she had. But I lived in the house with my grandma also. So I had kind of both worlds.
Right.
And grandma's world, like Bone would say, was a little different than mama's. Because mama was... This is what it is. This is how we're going to do it. Ain't no ifs, ands, and buts. But grandma had been there before. So with grandma, it was kind of like, I ain't got to go that route. You just listen to me. I got you. And you felt the more, and that's why I say the advantage or disadvantage, because I feel like I had an advantage as far as having parents that were older, because with that experience and maturity and the parents being older, what you get from that kind of for me was, It put me in a spot where I was more clingy, or I gravitated to my grandmother. You know what I'm saying? Because her approach seemed to me more calm and more at ease.
She was friendlier.
Right, right. Exactly. It's like, it wasn't, now don't get me wrong, puts the lady law down too. But just from the standpoint of that, it was more relatable. I mean, you just, it was love. Both was love, but her love was like that teddy bear. You could just ball up under her. Even when mama would beat me and she would laugh, I would go to her. You know what I'm saying? I would go to her because wrong is wrong. She wasn't going to condone me doing wrong.
I feel you. Because I'm looking at my nephew and my nieces and their relationship with my mother, their grandmother, you know, and their grandfather. The things that they get away with.
With you?
With my mama.
The one who,
okay. You know, stuff that, you know, I would never think of doing or I would never think of saying in her presence that they do and they get away with. I would fly through a wall if I would have said that. Or I would, you know, be beat half to death if I did that. Was in any means, I don't want to say disrespectful, but no, I'm saying in some cases disrespectful.
Yeah.
You know, they get away with a lot more than I would have even thought I would even try to get away with.
Well, we would have even imagined anybody getting away with them.
But see, they were that, what that's, and I don't think it's a conscious thing. It's more subconscious. But like going back to you, you had mama and grandma in the same house. See, grandma know I ain't got to exert as much
because
mama is still there.
Mm-hmm.
I can guide him, but I can also let him get away.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas mama feel like I can't let him get away.
At all.
Nothing. Because responsibility lies solely on me. You know what I'm saying? I think that's the same thing you might see when... Now, my mom was a little bit different. Like, she, kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, neighbor kids. I don't care who, kids is kids. And I'm going to treat them all the same way. Now, there are a couple things, a couple different, but for the most part, everybody knows what to do, what not to do around mama slash grandma slash great-grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we know what to do. We know what we can say. I'm 34 years old and can't say the word lie in front of my mom.
Yeah.
I can't say that. That's not a good word. And you can't say that.
Yeah.
Not if I'm around.
Yeah.
Because we know she don't like it. But at the end of the day, that's just what it is. That's the kind of that's the kind of upbringing.
Those are boundaries that she set.
That's it.
Yeah,
for
the boundaries.
Circle, for her circle,
yeah,
that's the
it.
Boundaries.
That's
that
it.
Set.
I remember talking to my mom maybe about a couple months ago. We was having a conversation, just kicking it, and I said, huh? And she said, huh?
Who are you talking to?
Yeah, she said, huh? I said, yes, ma'am. And we went right on with the conversation.
Yeah, now we can talk.
But then you get lax and you get older and because, you know, you get away from a certain things, and that goes back to the childhood. As long as it's still being instilled, it's still there.
That's crazy. That's that structure. Like,
yeah.
We had this conversation before about, you know, say just something similar to saying yes, sir, yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
You know, how a lot of kids these days, they don't do that.
No.
It's huh, yeah, or whatever. You know, that is the yes, sir, yes, to the point where it has shaped me so much in my life that as a 36-year-old man, I, to this day, still have people telling me that you don't have to say yes, sir, yes, ma'am, all the time. I can't help that.
Yeah.
That's Foreign Boston fault.
It's in you. It's in you.
If you got the lashes that I got from saying, huh, and yeah, you know, you would understand.
Take disrespect.
Take disrespect. I have no choice but to give you disrespect. Take it. And I want to jump off of something real quick.
Go ahead.
I want to talk about examples, right? Mm-hmm. Examples that have structured us as to be the men that we are today.
Yeah.
Specifically, the relationship with your father, the male figure in your life. All right. For me, I grew up seeing my father wake up at the crack of dawn, go to work, be at work all day. When he get home, you know, he's working again in the yard, you know, and basically my relationship with my father was from afar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
from afar.
He's there, but
he ain't there. You know what I'm saying? No, he's there in the yard. I might be able to go and hold a quick conversation with him, say a few words, but outside of that, I got to leave him alone because he's busy. You know what I mean? Okay, to this day, now I wake up at the crack of dawn. Go to work and work all day. You know, and come home and find myself tired and wore out from my day that to put forth an effort to be that father figure that I know I should be in my household is strenuous.
Yeah.
You know, it takes effort.
Yeah.
You know, and what I do is I sit in that moment and think, you know, if this was my daddy, he probably wouldn't even take his time to even hang out with me like this. So, you know, is that what I'm trying to do here? Am I trying to be like my father in a sense? Yes, I want to be like him. But in another sense, the things that I did not get, that as a 36-year-old man, I wish I got, that I want to try to give to my kids, that time playing, you know, horse playing around in the house, watching a TV show. You know, my son likes listening to music, so I have to get into that too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And be involved in that also. So it just, that's one thing I want to touch on, just our experience with our fathers. And how that shaped us as men.
Yeah,
it's irreplaceable, man.
Yeah, it is.
For a young boy, and as I'm sitting here saying, it's like I'm going all kind of different ways within myself. But as a young boy, there is nobody else on the face of the planet that will hold the respect or disrespect that a father would.
Yeah.
Now it's up to you which one you want to hold. Like if that disrespect don't matter to you, okay, but just understand that it's there. And once it's there, it's pretty much going to be there for the duration. It's hard to turn that around. But again, there's nobody else that can fill that role. You can have a neighbor who is on point and spend time with you every day and talk to you as a father, do everything that a father should do, but inside yourself, you wondering, why am I?
Yeah. It's always going to be compared to the original.
What you know you should.
Right.
The original. It's always going to come back to the original. It's always going to come back to that. To piggyback on Bone Point, I can remember, like, Daddy, he got up at 5, went to work. He came home, he sit down, he get a bite to eat, he kick his feet up, watch the ball game, say, hey, Daddy, he say, hey, how was your day? That'd probably be the end of it. And he'd go and do it again the next day. On the weekend, he'd get up, he'd chill around the house. He was always laid back, kind of cool, didn't say too much, you know what I mean? But when he did see you, he engaged you. He engaged you in a matter of way. It was cool, he didn't talk to you, but he always was in his own set world. Today, I'm the same exact person. I'm the same exact person, man. And it's so crazy because I didn't realize until I didn't have it no more to look at. You know what I mean? And it was like once it wasn't there anymore, that's when I realized I miss my father from the standpoint of not that I need him anymore because he gave me all he needs to give me. I miss him from the standpoint of that I can't look at myself anymore. And when I realized that, the pain kind of dulled out. It kind of dulled out because it was the realization he gave it to you. Now go do it. You already there. You doing it and didn't even know it. It took me to lose him to see I had became him. But the beauty in that was everything he stood for, I respect.
And I feel you. I think what we're saying is things that happen in childhood, before we even went into it, we said that they have a bigger impact than we realize. In talking about it, I guess we're getting that realization. But what I like I said when I was talking about what I didn't get from home, when I had the ability or when I wanted to know something, I went to probably what was the wrong source to get it.
Get it, yeah.
And if these are people, let's just say, let's talk about us three because we sit here. If it was something I wanted to know at 12, 13, 14, and I know I can't get it at home, I'm going to ask y'all.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't know nothing. 12 or 13, but they don't tell us what answer you're going to get.
And, but think about where we went, though. Think about how life has evolved.
Yeah, evolved. Mm-hmm.
From 12, 13, 14 up until probably 20, 21, we were teaching each other.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
We were teaching each other what life was about. And
that's
how
true.
That's who we became.
That's very true.
Now, I was rooted in what I learned up until that point. But if you're going to tell me something that I agree with.
Yeah, I'm going with.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
then I know
yeah. And you with me?
Oh, yeah. And you saying that makes me think, right, about, you know, the state of the community. We talk about the state of the community and, the, you know, and the, these young men that are coming up today. You know, not saying that they all are lacking a father figure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of them just out there making bad decisions. No, but the ones that, you know, did not have that example, where would we expect them to get their information from?
From their peers, just like we did.
Exactly.
So, how, you know, we want to say that, you know, we don't understand how they act like that. We don't understand. We understand.
It was just different for us.
Right.
Because we was in a different time. But even if those resources were there, how many of them would actually go against what everybody else is doing to take heed to an older resource?
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? It looks like we have a call on the line. We're going to go ahead and let them chime in on the conversation and see what they might have to offer to us. You're live on the air. If you want to go ahead and state your comment or question.
Call.
Hello.
Are you with us?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello.
Hello. This is your auntie from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm calling. I hear your show, and I'm very, very proud of what you young men are talking about. Respect is a beautiful thing, and I just want to let you know I'm proud, and I love you. All right?
All right. Appreciate that, auntie. Appreciate the support and the love, as always.
All right, good baby. I love you.
Love you too.
All right.
I gotta make me work, good baby.
Yeah.
Good baby. So, yeah, that's what's up, man. But let's focus. We talked about childhood for a good minute. We got like 45 minutes. Let's focus on what would you call those teenage years?
Teenagers. Yeah.
Those teenage years when I'm gonna say it quite bloodily, like we talk about what we see in this, that, and the third, but if you would be honest, could nobody tell you nothing about that?
And then? No. Mm-hmm. No.
Right.
No.
And there is nothing that you can tell me at this point. I have a job. I go to school. I have a car. I go where I want to go. I do what I want to do. I ain't never been to jail. I won't ask you for no money.
I say yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am.
There was nothing that you could tell me.
Right?
Right?
Nothing.
Yeah. What am I doing wrong?
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. We was having this conversation, and I was telling y'all guys the other day. Well, it was yesterday, actually. At some point, once I left elementary school, and I went into the sixth grade, I lost Derek. I became, because up in elementary school, it was basically everybody from the community I was in. We went to Palm View. It was all of us. So
you
were still that. Yeah, you were still the same environment.
Yeah.
When I went to Lincoln, there go disco. There go ski. Hey, come. And at once that came in, Derek kind of got pushed to the
side.
He
took a back seat.
Yeah, he took a back seat. And I rode that wave all the way until about 30. You know what I'm saying? And so I can give you some stories, buddy. If we can start, from there and just ride on my teenage years, man, they were terrible. Because I became so involved in the environment I was in. Not saying that I couldn't have still took what I knew as a child in that environment. It was just easy to adapt to what was being done around.
I don't even think it was that. It's just the simple fact that I've been this other thing for so long Now,
this is what you've been keeping me from.
I'm growing, and I'm learning something new.
You're evolving.
Good or
that
bad.
Stage.
Exactly.
That stage,
yeah.
You evolving,
yeah,
at that stage. You're becoming, the blueprint is being laid to what you see for yourself.
Exactly.
Right, right.
That is what y'all, like you just said. Oh, this thing, what y'all want to tell me about. Like,
right,
hmm,
right, right.
So now I see what's real.
And this is on.
Right.
This is
on.
This
that's
is
what
on.
It boiled down
it's
to.
It's boiling and rolling. It's jumping in Palmetto, though.
Man, we can sit around. We're going to be honest.
We're going to be honest.
Man, look, I can go in the store myself.
Nobody.
At 15 and 16 and buy my own liquor.
Yeah.
I ain't going to go get nobody to buy this for me. I can walk in and buy this. I got a car. I got my money. I got... What?
Yeah. And it came to the point where we going in there like it ain't nothing.
That's what I'm saying.
Like
I'm
it
saying
ain't nothing.
The audacity, or the, I'm going to say it bluntly, the balls.
The balls.
That it took for us to just walk in the store knowing good well we ain't had no business in there.
No, I could count the number of times I didn't walk into the store with the police in the store.
Yeah.
Didn't even hesitate.
No fear whatsoever about, I ain't got no concern for this store clerk. I ain't got no concern
got
about
some choice words for him.
People finding out.
Right.
I ain't got no concern about nothing other than me getting what I want in this moment. And the only thing that's going to stop me from getting it is me not having the money to get it. But
that's
I knew I had the money when I came in. So ain't nothing stopping me from getting this.
And
yeah, that's crazy.
But what it was we had been doing it, had came to the realization, like you said, we was invincible.
Mm-hmm.
We thought inside ourselves, you was wrong for telling us we couldn't. We had really came to that understanding.
Who are you?
Who are you
to tell me that I can't?
What? You don't know who you
are.
Whatever,
man. Whatever.
Now, if I ain't talked no time before this, I'm finna talk to you. You just told me what I can't do.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm gonna tell you who you really. You don't know who you're dealing with. All the time not knowing, I didn't know who I was dealing with.
Right, exactly.
I didn't know what I had became.
Exactly.
I didn't know how my life had shifted based on the things that I accepted from my peers.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
You know what I'm saying? Not saying that anything was wrong with anything other than my decision. That one was wrong.
It came back to all those individuals. And like I can accept it today, if you'd have told me then, it wouldn't have been so nice.
Right.
Because I was doing what I wanted to do, and it was different from that boring stuff I had been doing as a child, which I didn't realize that was really fun.
Man.
Yeah, you thought it was boring.
Boring, huh? Yeah, because it was different.
Right.
It was different. It was a different way of doing things. Man, look, man, check this out.
No,
I'm finna go.
I sit oftentimes and think about this, like, being from a boy.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really have no backup in Bradenton. Not even thinking about Sarasota. We would get in the car, two or three of us, and be in Sarasota on the strip as teenagers.
Yeah, yeah.
2, 3 o'clock in the morning in Sarasota, ain't got nobody to rely on. If something happened right now, I'm just stuck. But that invincible mind state, it's like it don't matter. Whatever come this night right here, I can handle it.
The I can name several places. The Strip, Martin Luther King, Sarasota.
Yeah.
The bar, like the 801.
801.
We were Friday.
The Cap.
The Cap. Man, no.
I ain't never do the Cap. I'm going to be honest with you.
I wouldn't go in the 801. You would go to it, but you wouldn't go in.
No, I never went in the 801 back then when we used to go. I'd be out now hanging out. Okay, I'm never.
Yeah, you'll be on
but
the
I never went in. I would see y'all in and get me a drink, but I never went in. But yeah, but the thing is, man, this is, when we was at that age, what happened? Once we got a little taste of it, because of the way we shaped and the way we do things, we went all in. We went all in. But to our credit, we kept respect with it.
Right.
We weren't disrespectful. Even if we was doing wrong and you came up and you was an elder or you was somebody we respected, even if you weren't nobody we respected, if you was grown, you weren't finna see us doing
that.
We're
going to hold that down. Like,
You know what I mean? We weren't finna do that out in the open. We weren't finna do it like that. Now, you might have knew we was doing it. And because of the way we did it and with the respect we gave you, I think we got allotted a lot of time. We got allotted to do it.
Got away with it.
Right.
Got away with
right.
it. Whereas, like, there's a lot of things I know my mom and dad knew I was doing.
You have.
Can I tell a story?
Tell a story. I don't care. I don't know past it now, but I'm saying you had to know what I was doing. But at the end of the day, by you, I want to say this. I want to say by you allowing me, but at the end of the day, how could you have stopped me?
No.
There was nothing that you could have done at that point.
Come on, we were cleaning it up. When we left Palmetto, we left Palmetto. We became back that Roboni childhood again.
No. I brought Palmetto, Sarasota, all that with me.
Yeah.
Wherever I went, it was with me. And what I mean was when I felt like okay.
We talking.
I used to smoke daily, heavily. Marijuana. Heavily. Once I got introduced to that. And I went home and came back out alive the next day.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm on. It's on. It's on.
It's on.
I was petrified to go home that first day because I know I can't hide this.
Once you got away with it.
Once I, that's why I say
yeah,
I went
yeah,
home
yeah,
and
yeah.
came back out the next day. I ain't dying out. They ain't kill me. Oh.
The difference for your boy was he got on that oil. It wasn't no high. So I stayed away from Roboni. Much as I could. Now, it got back to Roboni, of course,
yeah.
because I was so out there with it. But, man, I got to tell a story.
There we go.
We were about 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
So me and Cora, we done came home. I just a long night. We had been to the one or something like that, hanging out all night after the football game. Got a good bottle of that,
VSOP.
Big bottle. With the handle, nigga. With the handle. We got a bottle.
He went back for
real. So for some reason, I don't know why, usually we leave the bottle in the car. Because nobody messes with the car. Oh, you know what? I always thought the bottle was actually in the ditch. But I believe he took the car that morning.
Tell the story. After I dropped you off, I made me another drink.
Oh.
So I took the bottle out of the car, and I made my drink, and instead of putting the bottle in the car,
you just said that,
right? I put the bottle up next to the house, thought I was hiding it under a rag.
Right.
So I made my drink, I smoked, you know, before I walked in the house, you know, whatever. I go in, lay down, have me a good sleep. I'm out the next morning after I talk to you and ask you, you ready to start this party over here?
Yeah, I'm ready. I know we got this good barber. We finna get it going. Saturday.
I call you and I'm like, hey, man, I'm up. I'm finna come get you. We finna go get it. We finna go get started. I walk out of the house and my daddy and your Uncle Slim is sitting there and they working on the car, on his car. My car in the same spot I parted the night before. So I'm figuring in my mind, I don't know how this going to work because all I want to do is get this bottle and get going. But I don't know how I'm going to take this bottle because the bottle over here under this rag sitting next to the house and they sitting right here in plain view. How am I going to make this work? This is where Invincible kicked me.
Yeah.
I walked to the car and I was just going to leave it. Like, nah, I can't do that. I'm going to just leave. Got in the car. Paced around the car a couple times like I was doing something, trying to muster up the strength, and I'm like, nah, I'm just go. I couldn't though. I went to the spot where I put the bottle, acting like I was looking for something else. And when I moved the rag, the bottle wasn't there.
Yeah.
I ain't stopping thinking that moment. They got me. I ain't thinking that.
I'm like, did I forget where I put it?
Because he's so invisible, he's knowing nobody messed with his bottle. Man, look. They bust out laughing. They bust out laughing, and my dad, he pulled the bottle from me where I couldn't see. He pulled up, this what you looking for? I said, yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. They laughing and they drinking our liquor.
Yeah.
But what I'm going to say?
We had to take that one.
It take that long.
We had to take that.
He's sitting there, man, y'all drink better than me. They sat there and enjoyed our bottle, and I just had to take that loss. But again, that added to my invincibility. I lost that bottle.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to go get another one.
You lost that bottle, and the worst that happened was you got laughed at?
Yeah.
Wait till what you watch what I put here tomorrow.
And you told me I'm drinking better than you. I impressed you.
Watch what I put here tomorrow night. What? Take this one.
Okay.
And that moment, though, what should have happened was a conversation.
Yeah, you've been corrected.
Hey, man, this ain't okay. I understand you in the stage and this, that, and third, boom, 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 but this is not cool. This is not okay. I got the impression that
it was okay.
It's kind of okay. But it's kind of not.
Yeah.
And the kind of not is, I'm going to drink it.
As long as you don't see it.
As long as you don't see it, I'm okay.
But I know you know now.
And because I know you know, that opened the floodgates. I'm talking about coming home on a Friday after school and like, okay, I'll be back. This is my words, I'll be back. Got a backpack and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't come back till Sunday right before it's time to go to school. Or may come home Monday after
school.
I'm going all weekend. Tallahassee and all. So nobody know where I'm at. Something happened, I'm just out there.
We was reckless, man. We were reckless, but he covered us so good that we didn't even see it.
But what it did, now that we're getting away from those teenage years and going mm-hmm. into adulthood, it set, I speak for myself, it set me up for a lot of years of learning things the hard way.
Yes, sir.
Because I had this invincible attitude. And on top of that, now I'm legally grown. Mm-hmm. Now I can walk in the store. And I ain't worried about it.
Not that I was before, right. But now I know rightfully.
Now I know that I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it set me up for, it set up a lot of, like I said, learning things the hard way, realizing the mistakes that I made when I thought I was having fun. And some of them are irreversible.
Yeah.
Some things you can't go back and change. You can't correct some things. You can't erase the memory of some of those things that happened.
Boy, you just have nerves in there. I'm gonna tell you something. I'm gonna tell a personal story because I feel I need to tell this because to understand me, you have to understand where I've been. My teenager set me up to be an alcoholic, and it almost destroyed my life because I left that childhood behind, became who I was as a teenager, and took that with me for a long time. That invincibleness and thinking what I say is what it is. What you say is what you say. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I took that for a long time and I became an alcoholic, man. I almost destroyed everything around me because I got so engrossed in something. Then when things became to the point where they became overbearing, I went back to alcohol to cover me. That was my comfort zone because that was the bottle understood me. The bottle is what I've had for the last 15, 16 years.
The bottle made you a man.
Yeah. In that moment, once I took that first drink, nigga, what you saying now? Who cares? You know what I mean? Who cares what you talking about, man? I'm good. I got my bottle. I can buy it.
I can buy it.
I'm grown. I'm working. I'm getting it. That mentality almost destroyed me, man. Destroyed me, man. I was 30 years old, man. 30 years old. By myself, when I realized, this ain't working, man. This is not working. I don't know how it happened. No, I'm going to take that back. I do know how it happened. I do know exactly how it happened. The Lord said, you tired. Come with me. And I humbly followed him. And ever since that point, I've understood one thing. If I could do it over, I'd do it again. Because I'd never be the person I am today if I went through what I seen yesterday. And that's the God honest truth, man. That's the God honest truth. And it was hard. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say to go through struggle is easy and to go through the years I went through as a teen because I had fun. in my mind. I was having fun.
And it was fun according to what you understood.
Sure.
Right.
But once that shift came and he stepped in and I walked behind him, listen, I'm going to tell you the truth, man. I've never said this live or outside of our circle. For 16 years I drunk, and I drunk hard. I drunk hard. The last 4 or 5 of my years I drunk real hard after I came back from Iraq. The last 5 years of my life since I've been sober, man, let me tell you something. Living is good. I was walking around here dead for 16 years and thought I was having so much fun. Once I stepped outside of that, of what I had became, and realized there was so much more for me, I began to live, man. You can't beat living. If anybody living and can hear me on this radio right now, if you living, you understand exactly what I'm saying. Because there ain't nothing better than that. There's nothing in life better than living. It's not. And it's a lot of us, and I'm not trying to be judgmental, but I'm just being real. It's a lot of us walking around dead and don't even know. You ain't got to die and go to Woody.
But see, let's look at how it happens. Because you have to understand, again, teenage years is what could have and what was probably intended to kill the adulthood.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of 50 and 60 and 70-year-old teenagers walking around today. And it's not a shot at anybody. It's just that we never come to the understanding that what I've learned so far ain't all there is to learn.
Not to cut you off, T, but that's my point. I'm not telling you the story or sharing the story with anyone to condemn them. I'm sharing the story with you to understand I was there. I can relate. I've been there. I'm not better than you. I don't want to be better than you. I want to be with you, and I want us to do this together. So that's why I'm telling you my story. I'm telling you my story because it comes from my heart. It don't come from nowhere somebody told me to say this, or somebody is telling me to say this, but that's God, because that's who led me to this point. But when I'm telling it to you, I'm telling it from a place of genuine. Because the truth of the matter is, I don't have to share it. I don't have to share it, you know, and it's not like I'm trying to do anybody a favor. I'm trying to bless you with my blessing. That's
but
what I'm trying
to
do.
But you are, though. For those who have an open enough mind to listen without
judging.
Taking it as a shot.
Right, exactly.
You are doing a favor. You are, because it does you no good to learn anything if you can't turn around and then teach.
Teach, yeah.
What did you learn it from?
That's true.
Speaking for myself, after listening to your story, Dad, I'm sitting here, I'm listening to you, and I was with you. For just about all of them 16 years.
Yeah. All right. We were together. All together.
You know what I'm saying? I was with you, and I saw from a childhood, from the transition from a childhood to our teenagers, and then from that to who you are today. And I can say this to you. You know what I'm saying? You are a shining light of an example of you don't have to become who you are at that time. You're not trapped in that. You know, that doesn't have to make you, all right? That experience made you. It made you realize that that wasn't for you, and it made you who you are today. So I don't want it to come off as if I'm beating anybody down that's out there doing something, okay? Because it would be hypocritical of me to say that when I went through and I did the same thing that a lot of them out there doing now. But that doesn't have to be it.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to be you. You know what I mean? You go through it, you learn from it, and you try to become better. That's life.
Yeah.
That's what life is about, is making mistakes, you know, having successes, and learning from those experiences, those good and bad experiences, and trying to become a better person. And I think that's the story that we're trying to lay out there for people.
That's exactly what we're trying to do.
You know,
and I appreciate that, Bo. I appreciate it.
I mean, I've said it to you. I've said it to you in a number of different ways because our relationship is what it is and has been. And there was a gap in time, and it was when you went to Iraq, and even before that, where we didn't talk as much,
mm-hmm.
But I feel like had we saw each other, it wouldn't have been...
And where it was.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't have been where I was. Yeah.
At the end of the day, though, the first time I saw and I realized that drinking, and I'm gonna use that because that's mm-hmm. what you used, was a problem, was when you came to Alabama that day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was just me and you, and I'm not gonna go into detail about
right,
anything
right,
like
right.
that, but I'm just saying that's when I realized that this is bigger than this.
Mm-hmm.
All the time before that, it was just like, okay, we all do this.
Mm-hmm.
It just affects him in a different way. And he has to learn how to control it and not allow it to control him. But in that time, I realized it's not even that. This thing is bigger than it. And in our conversation, listening to some of the things that you said to me, you realized it as well.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was.
Now, had you been a person that just had a closed mind, you would still be in that state right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's true.
Because you refuse to accept defeat. And it's not a defeat. It's really victory. You would have refused
yeah.
to accept the victory that was waiting on you
yeah.
by confronting that. So when I look at you and I, like I told you before, like watching that, and it's going to sound crazy with all the things that I've experienced, and I've been to church, you know, I've had close relationships in church and talks about God and this, that, and the third, but I saw it on a practical level.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it in my face. I saw the whole thing from start to finish. So that kind of gives me that ain't nothing God can't do.
No, it ain't.
Right.
Nothing impossible for God. It's not. And my story is so deep, and I don't want to go into it because I don't want to make this about me. I want to make this about understanding that I want you to understand our passion and our drive and why we are in the position we are now and the things that we are trying to accomplish and why we are doing it
mm-hmm.
because of what we've been through and what we've seen. I went to Iraq. I almost lost my leg. I lost the soldier next to me. And I came back and had the same mentality. God took me through that and saved me and brought me back. I remember my mama saying to me, and I never forget it, she said, God kept you here for something, and you're going to figure it out sooner or later. And this was in the midst of me doing the same exact thing I had been doing prior, just drinking heavy, doing what I wanted to do. So God said, well, God said, hold on, he ain't got it yet. He ain't got it yet. I'm going to take him through something else, because he's a little hard-headed. He's kind of hard-headed. So I went a little farther with my drinking. I drank heavier when I came back from Iraq, because I brought a lot of stuff back with me. A lot of people don't understand it. Just because I come home and I look good and on the outside appearance, I'm giving you good. The inside of me was torment. It was something in me killing me. And I had some substantial losses while I was going in and on. That was affecting me. I hadn't dealt with that. I was just drinking. You know what I'm saying? I came back, continued to drink. Now, I have my own thing. And I'm going to show you something. And I've told y'all this story before, but God put certain things in our lives. And what God gives you, can't nobody take from you. But you know what they are, because when you put up in a position where you finna lose them, it don't matter what it is you got, you give it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I took myself to a position where I went from not understanding God had saved my life and kept me here for a reason. I had a family, so I figured, okay, well, he kept me here for no family. Okay, I kept drinking. I was finna destroy that. When I seen my family finna leave me, and I seen I was going to lose the one thing. See, cars, money, houses, I had all that because I came back from Iraq. I was financially fine. I had all that. But what I didn't have was Derek. So I wasn't doing none of it no good. But when he put that one thing in front of me, he had gave me that no matter whatever, because I can lose a car, I can lose a house, I can lose all that, the money, all that, right now. That I got it.
Right. Right.
You know what I'm saying? I went and got it. What God gave me was a pen. When he put that in front of me and I seen I was going to lose, drinking wasn't that important. It wasn't that important no more. It really wasn't. And in that moment when I took that and I ran with it, I ain't took out my Nikes yet. I ain't took out my Nikes yet, man. Because to become what we are, we have to be understandable of what we've been. You can't, I can't sit here and tell you how to do anything if I ain't done it myself.
That's the truth.
I can't sit here and tell you why I'm so passionate now, why we have this love to want to get our story out there to better somebody else if I can't tell you I bettered myself. It don't do no good, man. I'm just talking hoopla to you. But now I'm telling you where I came from. I'm telling you, we telling you individually, this is where we came from. This is what we've been through. This is what we had as child, as children. This is what we had when we were growing up. We was reckless, yes. But today we understand. And all of that, we've been there, we went through it. Now we want to give to you the understanding we got. So you might don't have to go through it for 16 years.
And at the end of the day, for personally,
mm-hmm.
See, you had a disadvantage because you were the first one to have your struggle kind of publicized.
Yeah.
And I'll say out of the group. I'm not saying mm-hmm. the first one.
Yeah, right,
no,
right,
but
right.
Out of our group, you were the first one. And I had the advantage of watching, and like I just said 15 minutes ago, however long ago, it gave me the understanding that God can do anything.
Yeah.
You just have to be willing to give it to him and allow him to do it. He can do anything. So as I sit now in my struggle, in my whatever you want to call it, situation, it ain't fun, it ain't easy, it don't feel good, it don't look good, I don't enjoy it, but I accept it, and I accept it because I know that this ain't the end, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I started my story telling you who I talked to, who I used to talk to,
mm-hmm.
and when I stopped talking to that person, that's when life changed.
Mm-hmm.
I started learning from peers as opposed to going what I knew, with what I knew. That has been an ongoing cycle for me up until today.
Mm-hmm.
I will go against sometimes. Now, if I feel strong enough about what it is I believe, I ain't going against it. I don't care who don't like it. I don't care. I just don't care. But when it comes down to social aspects mm-hmm. of God, I struggle. Because I look at how other people communicate, live on a social level, and how it conflicts with what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, instead of going with what I believe, I go with what looks to be right. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of, I guess what I'm saying at the end of the day is, my whole thing has never been like I've drank just as long as you.
Yeah.
But that hasn't been my vice.
Right, right, right. Exactly.
My vice has been more interpersonal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It has been more of a fight within myself with what I believe to be right and what I choose to do wrong.
Wrong. Mm-hmm. Good way of putting it.
Good way of putting it.
Great way of putting it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, why can't I just accept what I know to be the right thing to do and just walk in that? Why is that so hard?
That's hard for everybody, though.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it. I mean, if it wasn't it, then it would be peace and love and happiness all over the world.
I get what you're saying, but
It is, but to bone point, I'm going to tell you why I understand totally where you're coming from. I just gave you an example of God saved me in Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and I still came back and didn't want to change.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So don't get so caught up in that you haven't evolved into getting over it yet. Just realize why you in it. This set me up to be.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you have that advantage because, like you said, I had the disadvantage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I got to see it. And even if I had not known or had not seen it personally.
Right, right.
I think that was just, and I'm not saying that, let me say it this way. I feel like situations that we are privy to, things that we either experience or we watch somebody else go through, it's for everybody.
Yeah.
Like what you go through ain't just for you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what you see somebody else go through ain't just about them.
Yeah, right, yeah.
So I guess at the end of the day, like I understand and I know that this thing is going, for me to sit here on this radio and talk alone and I said it twice already, but that's huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always been a person who cared about what you thought about what I had to say. Because I know that what I had to say probably didn't agree with what you thought I was going to say.
Right.
Yeah.
So now that I said what I believe, how you feel about it? But I shouldn't care about that.
Sure. That goes back to how we said in previous conversations where, you know, you say, oh, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I don't care about that. But
if you said
that, then you do care. Because if you didn't care, you wouldn't even say nothing about it. You wouldn't pay no attention to it or nothing like that. So that's big. I'm sitting here and I'm processing all this to myself and I'm listening to Dad. You tell your story, and you know, Corey, you tell your story. I haven't said much.
Yeah, we knew that coming in.
I didn't say much. You're right. I told you this is a struggle for me. I don't know if it's in the back of my mind, I feel like because I haven't gone through something as serious that you've gone through, Dad, or something maybe as personal as that you have gone through, that I feel like my story doesn't matter. But, you know, there are people out there, for instance, you know, just to throw a little bit about me, you know, I played sports at school, mm-hmm. and, you know, like you said before, that was our world.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We went to school, we played sports, and we hung out with each other. That was our world. So for me, a dream, I didn't necessarily have a dream of becoming a doctor or a lawyer or anything of that nature. I wanted to get involved in sports in some kind of fashion, you know, preferably participating in the sport itself. That didn't happen for me. So when that didn't happen for me out of high school, I was lost.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to do. I had no backup plan. So for a lot of years, I struggled with my purpose. All right? Mm-hmm. That struggle led me to halfway go to college. You know, I went to MCC. I graduated from MCC, but barely. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't because I don't know the work. It's because I had no passion for it,
mm-hmm.
you know. You know, along that way, along that path, though, I did find one thing. I found photography.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I had a love for it. You know, something about seeing an image, capturing that image, and the feelings that it evoked for me. And I wanted to present that to the world. All right. I want you to get the feeling that I had when I took this picture. All right. That's what it became. It became my expression. That part of that was God right there giving me an outlet. He saw me probably getting ready to implode because I was just so holding on to my feelings. I didn't want to share with nobody. You know, through heartbreak and all this kind of stuff like that, causing me to put up this huge wall and not allowing anyone in. I was gonna blow up. So he had to give me an outlet for, and it started out as photography, and that took me off to. It gave me something to look at that I wanted to do. Going off to FAMU, I went to FAM. I say I went to FAM. You know, I want to be specific when I say I went. I attended the school. I did not graduate. All right, and that's something that's a goal that I still have, even at 36. But that experience alone also taught me, you know. Maybe that wasn't it, but it set me up for it in the future, for whatever it may be. It opened my eyes to see that it's more than Robonia, it's more than Palmetto, it's more than Manatee County. And that's what I was running from.
Yeah.
School became my outlet. You know, the only way I could get out of Manatee County, the only way I could get out of Robonia was to go to school. So going to school was my escape, and along the way, I learned a lot about myself, you know, mm-hmm. that... Okay, at that moment, maybe school wasn't for me. You know, it became more of a personal education, educating myself in life, learning from my experiences. You know, having my parents, basically, I had no scholarships and stuff like that. You know, I had a Pell Grant. And when I lost my focus and my grades dropped, I lost that Pell Grant.
Yeah.
All right, so now it's just my parents paying my way through school. And somewhere along that, it clicked for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up here playing around, with my parents' money, doing what I want to do instead of doing what they sent me up here to do, you know, something clear about, okay, if you're not going to do what you're supposed to do, if you're not going to be a man, you know, go be a student, then it's time for you to become a man.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Stop playing. You know, get you a job. Don't get a job and hold it for a couple of months. Find you a career of some sort. You know, and that's how I end up. I ain't going to say their name on here because I don't know no legal.
Right.
But that's how I end up with the company that I work for and that I've been working for now for 9 years, right? Because I had to find my own way. These young kids out here today, y'all boys, y'all see me stepping up to the mic because I'm going to talk to
somebody.
Go ahead.
These young boys out here today running around beating their chest, calling themselves grown. You know what I'm saying? Because they of age, they legal, they 21, all right? You're not grown, bro. You legal, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Grown men take care of themselves. You know, they don't look for handouts. They get a job or some other kind of means of taking care of themselves, and that's what they do. If they have a child, okay. It's not about me no more. Now it's about that child. That's what it should be about. Okay, so now I'm not necessarily just working for myself. I'm working for my offspring, you know, or my lady, or whatever it is. I get confused when I see these boys around here in the streets calling themselves men because they got money in their pocket or they got a gun on their hip or something like that. They got on nice clothes. Where you getting them clothes from? You know what I'm saying? Did your mama buy you no clothes? Where you stay at?
Mm-hmm.
You know, stay with your mama. Nothing wrong with staying with your mama. For a couple of years, I stay with my mama.
We all did.
You know what I'm saying? But that can't be it. You know, you're not grown until you pay your own bills and, you know, and you take care of your own responsibility. That's when you grown. You know what I'm saying? That we lose what the real definition of grown is.
Mm-hmm.
Being an adult. You're an adult when you have responsibilities and you take care of those responsibilities. That's when you become an adult. And I feel like that's what has shaped me today. You know, we talk about our childhood and talk about our parents. You know, that's what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't have a very close personal relationship with my father, but at the same time, he shaped me into being a responsible adult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if it wasn't my father that I paid attention to, it would have been one of my uncles.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Or a neighbor, Mr. James Gordon across
mm-hmm.
the street. You know what I'm saying? He didn't really say much to me other than hey or goodbye, but I saw him get up every day and get in his
mm-hmm.
truck and drive up the road to his shop. And he was at his shop all day, and at the end, he came home.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We're losing the examples in the community of what being a grown person really should be.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to figure out how to get that back. Or we got to figure out how to get them to pay attention to us.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to first off say, I get where you're coming from. And I understand totally what you mean. And I just wonder, at 17, 18, 19, if we had somebody to say that to us as bluntly, where would we be? Because we had to learn it,
right,
through
mm-hmm.
experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now
like,
I'm not saying that because I don't know what anybody has said to y'all.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying like when you learn lessons and when you go places and you figure out things, it's not just for you.
Yeah, go ahead, T.
I'm sorry, I got a little distracted. You say, how do we get that back? Keep being the example.
That's it.
You just, like you said, I saw Mr. James Gordon. He didn't say much to me.
And he might not.
But I paid attention. And in paying attention, I learned something. If you, however big it was to you or however small it was to you, all you had to do was see. That's
yeah.
it. You saw him get in his car, drive down the street, stay in the shop all day, get back in his car,
come home.
You don't know what happened in between those events.
Right.
And it don't matter. What you needed to get out of that, you got it.
Yeah, and that goes back to what you were saying earlier too.
Yeah, just be the example. I enjoyed this today because I feel like we showed how evolution happens.
Mm-hmm.
Each of us have our own, and by no means are we saying, or am I saying, that there is a blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
But each one of us will have our lessons. Each one of us will have our experiences in life. Each one of us will make mistakes. Each one of us will have hard times. Nobody is exempt from that.
No.
But what the problem is when you allow those negatives to shape tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
For you to sit there and say, I came from having being pretty much spoiled to going out and learning from my peers and accepting the things and making choices that I felt I was having fun and that consuming me and ultimately becoming me.
Mm-hmm.
And not until it came, I was faced with losing everything that meant something to me. I had to make a choice, another choice. And now that I made this choice, not that I erased the other choice, but I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Totally.
So now I can do this with all my heart because I don't miss that.
I don't miss that.
Mm-hmm. I've done that. That's all this was about. That's all this is about. That, you know what I'm saying? Like we are human. When we give our opinions and when we give our thoughts on things, it's just that we look at it from a perspective that life happens.
Yeah.
But you also have a choice. And every day you wake up, you have a choice. It's up to you what choice you make. And you can make the wrong one for a long time. Eventually, let's just try to make better choices.
I think that sums it up.
That's it in a nutshell. And we was candid, we was open, we tried to reveal ourselves to you so you can understand where we're coming from and also understand our passion and our drive. We love doing this because, like we've explained from all our individual stories and experiences, God has given us an opportunity to walk our own struggle. Our own individual struggles to set a platform for tomorrow. For tomorrow, for us tomorrow, you know, and like Bone said, he watched Mr. James Gordon. Me and Corey can name off people we watched. Mr. James Gordon probably don't know you watched him, but the example that we lead, we want to exemplify that in everything we do today, and that's the whole point of Thoughts of a Brother. With that being said, if you boys got anything else for us,
good evening. Have one.
Hey.
Yeah, we'll see.
See you on Wednesday. We have a guest on Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. One thing real quick. I'm just doing a quick poll.
Mm-hmm.
I just found out today, but do y'all know the state of Florida legalized medical marijuana?
Did they?
They did.
They did?
Yes.
Okay.
And that's the point I'm trying to make is that they tried to slide something in real quick and not tell nobody.
Yeah.
This is a very small...
Sound like we got a topic for next week.
Yeah.
Sound like we got a topic, man. Y'all enjoy y'all the rest of y'all weekend, the rest of your evening, and we'll get with y'all.
With that being said, lock your doors, but open your hearts to the Lord. It's hard, but it's fair. One love, JWJ. Dad out.
40,000 dead. I think about the troops coming home from the east. I think about taking a mark and worshiping the beast. I think about Revelations 19 and 20, Isaiah 18 and Jeremiah 50. I think about me, my mama and my brother, how we grew up on Chapel Road and had to struggle. I think about all the victims of the hurricane. I think about all the homeless folk when it rained. I think about when we came over here slaves, and when it's time to leave, who gon' wanna stay?
Life, help my people say.